Hello from Cheltenham. The lingering furore over the Human Fertilisation and Embryology Bill, with its provisions for hybrid human-animal embryos, saviour siblings and so on, has come at a time when the conflict between science and religion seems to have become as heated as the great Darwinian debates of the 19th century. A rash of books, notably The God Delusion by Professor Richard Dawkins, have voiced a new impatience with what the scientist authors see as mere primitive superstitions, irrational, divisive, and blocking the road to progress. They reject the idea that science and religion occupy different spaces, seek to answer different questions, are, in Stephen Jay Gould's phrase, non-overlapping magisteria. There's been a furious counter-argument, not just from religious fundamentalists, but from fellow scientists who maintain that science cannot, will not, be able to explain the basic matter of existence, that there are truths beyond the merely empirical, that it is atheist scientists that are bigoted, arrogant, challenging respect for our shared humanity, even playing God themselves. The arguments crystallised around some of the most fascinating questions of our times. Has science disposed of so much of religion's narratives that we're left, at best, with a god of gaps? More practically, if science does destroy religion, what moral code do we live by? On what basis do we make decisions about right and wrong, not least about science itself? Can science and religion ever be compatible, or must these two ways of looking at the universe always be in conflict? That's our moral maze, recorded, appropriately enough, at St Andrew's Church as part of the Cheltenham Science Festival. Our panel, Melanie Phillips, social commentator on the Daily Mail, the former Cabinet Minister Michael Portillo, the Catholic writer Clifford Longley, and Claire Fox from the Institute of Ideas. Clifford Longley, always in conflict?
I'm a bit unhappy about the notion that they're in conflict. There are plenty of religious believers who are scientists and vice versa, and don't find the difficulty that you identify. It seems to me that we could just say that science is about description, and religious belief, insofar as it has a practical effect, is about proscription and prescription. In other words, it's about how people should behave or how they should not behave, whereas science describes what is the case. I don't see why those two necessarily have to be in conflict.
Michael Portillo?
Potentially in conflict, yes. I don't think we should be overly reassured by the fact that living in England in the early 21st century with the Church of England, which is a very moderate form of religion, that these two do not come in conflict. Indeed, even in 21st century Britain, in these circumstances, they do come into conflict from time to time. The fundamental point is that religious people feel that they're inspired by revelation, by faith, by certainty, and that puts it in conflict potentially with science.
Claire Fox.
I think there's a danger that there's a straw man conflict going on at the moment, that there's an argument that's been launched that the biggest threat to science is religion, which I disagree with. I'm broadly on the side of science. I'm slightly nervous, though, that science itself is expanding its authority in such a way that scientism is becoming the new religion, and that scientists sometimes act like a new priestly caste that we're not meant to challenge. I don't like religion because it tells us that we shouldn't think and we should be reverential, and I don't like science when it does it either.
Melanie Phillips.
Yes, there's no inevitable conflict. I think what conflict exists has been created by scientists who've basically got above themselves. To me, science explains what is observable in the world. It can't explain how that world began and what has given it the astounding complexity that science is revealing to us. And that's the province of religion.
Panel, thanks very much indeed. Our first witness is Professor Peter Atkins, a physical chemist, fellow of Lincoln College, Oxford, and author of about 60 books, including Creation Revisited. Professor Atkins, you're an atheist. You take the view, I know, that religion and science are utterly at odds. What do you make of people who believe in God, any God?
Well, they're slightly mad.
Slightly mad?
Well, almost completely mad. I mean, the science is the only way to true knowledge. Religion is a way of discovering what one thinks internally. But science is the way to truth. And the sooner we discard religion from this world, and particularly from the government of ourselves, the better it will be.
Clifford Longley, your witness.
So, I'm a Roman Catholic, so I'm mad. What scientific evidence is there for that?
Well, you believe in superstition. I believe in facts. I believe that we should decide whether there is a God worth our respect by starting from the view that there is.
This is a completely circular argument.
No, it's not. I haven't finished the argument yet, so you don't know if it encircles itself. That we should start from the bottom, and then when there is evidence for the existence of God, we should admit that there is a God. So far, I know of no evidence whatsoever that there is a God. Therefore, I do not believe that there is a God.
Well, you haven't convinced me it's not a circular argument. You just began by saying religion equals superstition. Those who believe in superstition are mad. You know, QED, if you like. Now, let me change the subject slightly. What can science usefully tell us about such things as love, self-sacrifice, heroism, laying down one's life for one's friends? And before you answer that, just give my own perspective on this. It was science's exact inability to throw any light on those things that explains my own journey from atheism to Catholicism.
Well, science can deal with every reasonable question. I think there is nothing that it cannot elucidate, provided you are patient and provided you break the questions down into smaller components.
Okay, love. What can science tell us about love?
Love is about psychology. Love is about physiology. Love is about the workings of the human brain.
What about self-sacrifice?
The same.
What about heroism?
The same.
The same. They're all reduced to, what, brain chemistry, to neuronic...
Yes, the brain is a physical object. It works on physical principles. There is nothing beyond the brain. And therefore, presumably, everything that the brain puts out into the world can be subject to analysis.
If science can answer all questions...
I'm not saying that it can at the moment.
No, but
it is a physical entity,
theoretically
it is
capable
open
of answering
to
all
scientific
questions.
Investigation.
It's theoretically capable of answering all questions, yes?
In principle. In
principle, yes, okay. So, as a scientist, can you answer a question like this? Is capital punishment right or wrong? Strictly as a scientist.
Yes, I think one can. I mean, in a very broad sense now, in the sense that we need to understand the basis of what is good in the world, and I believe that what is the nature of goodness has been moulded by our evolutionary inheritance.
You have a scientific definition of good?
I could formulate my own view of what good is.
A scientific view of what good is. Not bringing in your personal prejudices and upbringing and so on, but purely scientific.
Cliff, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but you were saying we reach a conclusion about the nature of good in an evolutionary way. Could you just explain that? Sorry, Cliff.
Yes, I think what all of us think of as good in this particular society has been moulded by the evolution of ourselves from the ape to the human, living in a society. And I don't see that... I think that that's where we should look for the nature of good. But it's more than just evolution. It's also being able to reflect upon the consequences of our actions, which moulds our view of good.
Melanie Finn, so with us.
There are many very distinguished scientists who don't share your view that there is nothing science can't elucidate. I mean, I can reel off a long list, but just to give one or two names, President of the Royal Society, Sir Martin Rees, Nobel Prize winner, Sir Peter Medawar, and indeed the cosmologist, Alan Sandage, has said, quote, "I find it quite improbable that order came out of chaos." Are they all mad?
Well, they're all incomplete scientists. I think a complete scientist should be an optimist that the extraordinary tool that mankind has discovered, namely the scientific method, is capable in principle, I think, of answering every conceivable real question. And if a scientist presents himself as a pessimist, then I think he is betraying his skill.
Mm-hmm. But isn't it your side of the argument that's actually guilty of very unscientific irrationality? As I understand it, your position is that science is the only way to knowledge and truth.
Yes.
But isn't it the case, and I speak not as a scientist, that science is not about certainty at all, but it weighs evidence and it judges probability? And indeed, the claim that science can know, that there is nothing that it cannot know, is itself unknowable and is therefore unscientific by your own test.
I think the distinction between a philosopher, which you're pretending to be at the moment, and a scientist...
I merely claim to be a journalist.
...is that a philosopher is a pessimist and a scientist is an optimist. We've discovered this extraordinary tool for discovering the nature of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And we are optimistic that there is no question that it cannot reasonably attack.
I take the point about optimism.
It might take 100 years, it might take 10,000 years.
Indeed, but optimism is, of course, an extremely attractive characteristic, and I wouldn't wish you or anybody else to be a pessimist, but you haven't, with respect, answered my question, which is whether what you have said is fundamentally unscientific.
No, it's not.
Well, what is your scientific evidence for your claim that science knows there is nothing that science cannot know?
I didn't say that I know it. But I said that it is my belief.
Ah, belief. We're getting into matters of faith, are we not?
Oh, that's such a cheap jibe, really.
But it's cheap but true.
I'm not sure whether the applause was for you or for me there. But
well, let's leave that hanging in the air. Claire Fox. Yeah.
You've emphasised what science can know, but what about what science can do? Because one of the things that strikes me is understanding the natural world is not the same as, for example, acting upon it to change it. But that isn't the realm of science. That might be the realm of politics, or it might be the realm of philosophy.
Science is
not fixed, is it?
Science is about the discovery of knowledge. And what we're looking for is a route to knowledge. The way that politicians might use that knowledge is entirely up to society.
Do you feel uncomfortable about the fact that politicians constantly now cite the evidence and scientists are pulled out in that way to close down debate?
They're not brought in to close down debate. Scientists are brought in to inform debate.
But then we have to decide what to do, and that's political.
You can respond. You don't want to. Okay, Professor Peter Atkins, thank you very much indeed. Our next witness is Dr. John Lennox, who's a Christian and a scientist, a reader in mathematics and fellow in mathematics and philosophy of science at Green College, Oxford. And incidentally, author of a book called God's Undertaker, Has Science Buried God? Dr. Lennox, has it?
I don't think so at all. I think science positively points towards God. And so I'm passionate about both science and God.
In what way does it point towards God?
Well, I think, first of all, that the very fact that the universe is rationally intelligible, which is the fundamental belief of all scientists, because scientists do have faith, is much more readily explicable on the grounds that there is an intelligent God who created both the universe and the human mind than it is on the atheist belief that we and our minds are simply the result of a mindless, unguided process. So that's the first thing. The second is that the history of science exploded in the 16th and 17th centuries, and it's no accident that most of the prime movers were believers in God.
Michael Bottoli.
It is asserted that science can't answer the question, why are we human beings here? But I don't understand why that is a reasonable question, and it seems to me that is an unanswerable question. And it doesn't seem clear to me why inventing God makes the question any easier to answer, even if it is a fair question.
Well, you're assuming that God's invented, but if
you're assuming the opposite.
Yes, but I think that, as I've just said, that there is evidence that God exists. The very fact that we're capable now of a rational discussion means there's rationality in the universe. And I don't believe I've invented God to give ultimate purpose. I feel that the universe itself and science points towards the existence of God. Certainly from the perspective of an atheist, and I presume you're speaking from that perspective, the question has no meaning because there's no answer to it.
Well, I don't know whether I'm an atheist or not, but what I think is that the fact that you and I are having a rational discussion does not in any way lead me to think that's a proof of the existence of God.
It's a pointer. It's a pointer. The universe, as I said earlier, is rationally intelligible. And I think the real issue these days is not a conflict between science and religion so much as a conflict between two worldviews, that of materialism and that of theism. And Theism, to my mind, gives a much better rational explanation of science and of our existence than atheism does.
Are you one of these people who believes that human beings are incapable of ethics or morality without inventing God?
Not at all. But you see, I think atheists sometimes put me as a Christian to shame. It's not the invention of God. From where I sit, all of us are creatures made in the image of God, and therefore we're moral beings, whether we believe in God or not. So certainly we can be good.
But I think I can give you plenty of examples from history of the way in which man has created God. I mean, lots of people have, you know, written tomes and testaments and so on. Where exactly is your proof that God invented man?
Well, I'm a Christian, as you've heard, and I get my pointers not only from science, but also from history. And I've come to believe, on the basis of evidence, because I think that faith is based on evidence, that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. And that, of course, changes my perspective completely. And again, I would want to say that the claim that God has created human beings makes more sense than the alternative, which is to explain the universe and life totally and exhaustively bottom up. That doesn't make sense to me as a scientist.
Claire Fox.
Aren't you rather trying to have your cake and eat it when you try and come up with a kind of scientific basis for your belief in God? Surely you're actually rather weakening the notion of faith.
Not at all. I think there's a contemporary massive confusion about the nature of faith. And indeed, we heard it earlier on, that faith is the realm of religion and therefore isn't worth talking about, and that facts are the realm of science. I believe that faith operates across the spectrum. Every scientist is committed to the belief that the universe is rationally intelligible. And faith is not something, as Richard Dawkins puts it, that rejoices in the absence of evidence. I would be a fool, I think, to believe in God if there weren't any evidence. So faith, well, let me give you a simple example. My faith in my wife is not diminished in the slightest bit by the fact that there's evidence on which basis I can trust her. I think that's a confusion of thought.
Can I move on to the morality question? It's arguable that contemporary morality could be well organised around humanism, in a belief in human ability, and that in fact religion anyway is a human invention. Might we not actually try and forge a morality based on putting humans first, and that in fact you deny that by putting God in front of human exceptionalism and humans at the centre of the universe?
Well, I would be very careful about that, because I think that history shows a slightly different story. The 20th century has given us enough examples of attempts to put humans first and carve a morality around some kind of a new man. I'm very sceptical.
But I mean, on the other hand, for example, say around the Joffe Bill around assisted dying, possibly you and I would share this. As a humanist, I was opposed to that.
Yes.
From a humanist point of view, you might have other reasons in relation to how you would think. Humanism is actually the one guarantee that humans will always triumph if you work on a human morality.
I'm not saying there's no truth in humanism. In fact, I would say that a lot of the elements of humanism I share. I have a very high view of humans because I believe we're all made in the image of God. And it's that that gives the sheet anchor.
Is that the only basis you can argue for humans then, because they're made in the image of God? Is there nothing great about us that's got nothing to do with God? There's lots of things that are great about humans that have got nothing to do with because we're in the image of God. Well, we're in the image of us.
But you're giving... This is a completely false antithesis. If there's a God who's created the universe, and then there's something wonderful about humans. Now, we, who are in the image of God, perceive these things. Ascribing it ultimately to God is not diminishing humanity. Ascribing humanity ultimately to a mindless, unguided process, to my mind, is very much diminishing humanity.
Dr. Lennox, thank you very much indeed. Our next witness is Professor Raymond Tallis, who's Professor of Geriatric Medicine at the University of Manchester. He's a philosopher, a poet, a novelist, and an atheist. Professor Tallis, there is a difference, isn't there, between religious assertions that science can disprove and those that science can't answer. Doesn't that leave room for the two to coexist?
It probably does. I mean, clearly the collision between science and religion has been exacerbated by mistakes on both sides. On the science side is scientism, the belief that you can explain absolutely everything. And I think there are large numbers of problems that cannot be explained by science, even in principle. The problem comes from the other side when empirical assertions are made by within the context of religious belief that have no scientific basis and indeed, or at least have no empirical basis, and in which clearly science has shown them to be false.
So from the perspective of an atheist scientist, does that leave enough ground for religion to stand on?
Well, as an atheist scientist, manifestly, I don't believe that there is much ground. I suspect my atheism doesn't come from science. I don't think science really can speak about those things that have led me to become atheistic. Why am I atheistic? Well, I think mainly because theistic explanations are total non-explanations. The very explanation is actually more difficult than the thing they're trying to explain. If you think of a self-created creator, if you think of an intelligent being that somehow appeared for no reason, if you think of something that's supposed to be both infinite and yet addressed by individuals, you can see that the concept of God is even more difficult than most of the concepts that you're trying to solve.
Melanie Phillips.
Professor Tallis, you're presenting a big problem in trying to reconcile religion and empirical-based science. Isn't it, though, true to say that without religion there would be no science? Let me just explain briefly. We all know the beginning, or some of us know, the beginning of Genesis. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Isn't it the case that that narrative gave rise to the belief by all of us that we live in an orderly universe, which means that it is intelligible to us, which is the whole basis on which science started trying to discover what that universe consisted of? I mean, after all, Galileo
said...
You're
going to let him answer this question.
I just rather like this quote by Galileo. The laws of nature are written by the hand of God in the language of mathematics. Is there really no conflict here?
What you're saying is that science will have pre-scientific origins. Of course it does. Science grows out of something that is pre-scientific. And so the intuition that the world is coherent, that the world is intelligible, of course may have come from religion, but in many ways our approach to the world in that sense, we've outgrown the religious basis of it.
But am I right in thinking that an atheist believes that, you know, the world was not created by a designer that created it from an orderly, intended sense of anything, but it was created out of chaos? But if that is the case, that the universe is chaotic, then there could be no place for science because there is nothing intelligible, nothing rational for us to investigate.
I don't think we can basically address these issues scientifically. It seems to me that, yes, order may have come out of chaos. Who knows? Certainly there is no evidence that people have religious beliefs provide for me to make me believe that they have a handle on understanding how order came out of chaos.
Well, let me try another tack. Isn't it the case that, especially today, with the astounding discoveries made by scientists about the extraordinary complexity of creation to a degree that we never thought was possible, that out of that very understanding of complexity has arisen faith? For example, it has been said, and I won't go into the mathematics, I don't fully understand them, it has been said that there's about as much chance of life on Earth having been created by a random process as a tornado sweeping through a junkyard would create a 747 plane. You
yes.
may scoff and mock, but this is... I mean, perhaps you are more mathematically inclined than people who have come to this conclusion, but isn't that the case?
I think I need to address this one, because this is an example Richard Dawkins has dealt with over many years, and it's a very good one. I'm very glad you gave me this free gift, as it were. It seems to me that what we have is you can have order growing out of randomness if you have a process of natural selection, a process of selective survival of certain kinds of order. And if you have a sufficient amount of time, you don't require a designer, you just require the combination of natural variation and selective survival in order to generate quite complex organisms.
Clifford Long?
You mentioned earlier about, I think you said something about the way humanity had grown out of religion. Did that phrase ring a bell? My own experience, as I mentioned earlier, is that I've grown into religion. But nevertheless, that implies an evolutionary process, that at certain stages of consciousness, religion was necessary, and at certain stages it wasn't. Supposing the current research now going on in Oxford was to throw light on the possibility that, in fact, we were programmed by evolution to have religious belief, and it's actually in our genes. Would that change your view of religion?
I don't think it would. It would be quite embarrassing for religion, of course, because it then would make religion a purely naturalistic phenomenon.
I'm asking what your reaction is. I'd have to handle it my way, but I wondered if would it make a difference to you that religion actually, as it were, we'd grown into religion as a species?
I can't imagine that discovery being made, for a start. And it seems to me the notion of genes for religion or whatever is a massive category error. Religion, of course, comes out of human culture, and it's unlikely to be, as it were, woven into our DNA.
So it's unlikely. So that's your rejection of the possibility that something else might occur. Can I change the subject slightly? It seems that what you ought to be worrying about is that the case for science is now being overstated, that it could actually discredit science. Is there not a possibility that you rather need to keep science at a modest level, a rather humble level, and not to seek out enemies like religion that can be crushed, precisely because science is itself not greatly trusted by society, and if you go too far, that distrust is going to grow?
First of all, I don't see religion as an enemy in that sense. I think it's a remarkable product of human consciousness, and it has produced fantastic monuments in the past. And I think there is something behind religion that I think is worth exploring, behind both religion and science. I think there's a point of convergence.
Mm.
But I am as adamantly opposed to scientism as you are. It seems to me that one of the things that really will discredit science is the claim that it's explaining things like human consciousness. I mean, I've written a 1,000-page trilogy actually raging against that particular notion that science can explain consciousness.
Okay, and finally, do you think I'm mad?
I haven't seen any evidence so far, but who knows? I'm hanging about.
Professor Tallis, thank you very much. Our last witness is Lord Robert Winston, writer, broadcaster, professor of science and society, and emeritus professor of fertility studies at Imperial College. Lord Winston, you've been accused of playing God enough. Do you think science, in the absence of religion, is capable of shaping the ethics by which we should be living our lives?
Well, it's still playing God, first of all. Playing God is imitatio Dei, and actually we're given a God-given intelligence to use. So imitating God is the best thing we can do, providing we use that wisely.
Okay. Do you think that science, in the absence of religion, is capable of shaping the moral code by which we should live our lives?
Well, I think that religion helps. I don't think it's necessary. I think you can be perfectly good without religion. But I think being religious gives you a framework in which to work.
Okay. Claire Fox.
The context, I think, of this present concern about religion and science is the idea that religious figures are unduly interfering in decisions that relate to scientific progress. And there's, you know, in some ways a kind of complaint by science that what on earth are these bishops doing, telling us, you know, that we should be able to do this experiment, that we should be able to move medicine on in this way? How do you feel about that context? Is religion interfering in science too much?
I can't agree with that, Claire, because I think that you are tending to lump all religious leaders into one category. And whilst we've seen, for example, some Catholic leaders being fairly aggressive about embryology, we've seen other Anglican leaders being very progressive about embryology, and we've seen many Jewish leaders, for example, being positively, trying to advance the technology. So I think, you know, it's dangerous to suggest that religion is necessarily trying to inhibit science.
Would we be better to conceive that these things are in two separate boxes and they should never the twain should meet, as it were? I mean, science is would you concede amoral? Science of the project is an amoral project.
Well, I mean, science is knowledge, so knowledge itself, of course, is amoral, but, of course, the use to which that science is put is desperately... has desperately important ethical issues. And I would argue that they can live together and that they should live together. I know that in my own scientific work throughout, I've been heavily influenced by my religious background, my religious belief, and the ethics which I've been taught.
Well, regardless of your personal decisions, is there not a danger, though, that... I mean, it seems to me that too many scientists these days are getting tangled up in ethics committees. They spend their whole time in ethics committees thinking about ethics, and they'd be better off, actually, in the laboratory. Whether society decides to implement the scientific technology is a different question. But aren't you muddling them up? You are ultimately holding back science because of your religious views.
I totally disagree with you. I'm not holding back science. I don't think my publication record would justify that
statement. Don't take it personally.
But, well...
I'm making the point about whether...
There's no evidence of any scientist holding up science for that reason. But you come to the issue of ethics, and I think it's very important. I would argue there isn't enough ethics. I would argue that actually, if science is to be accepted by the public more, then books like The God Delusion are rather dangerous because they suggest to people that actually there doesn't have to be an ethical framework in which we work. And I believe that should be much more prominent. I think that part of public engagement, which is essential to science, must include ethics.
Did Richard Dawkins suggest that there shouldn't be an ethical framework within which you work? Suggesting it shouldn't necessarily be informed by religion.
I think that Richard Dawkins is an outstandingly good writer. But I think The God Delusion is a mistake. I don't think it's his best work. I think, as Clifford Longley has suggested, to call somebody mad who doesn't hold your same beliefs actually argues a degree of arrogance, which I think is unfortunate.
Michael Portillo, sorry.
You've referred to your religious background. You were born into a family of religious observance, I think. But since then, as a scientist, have you come across evidence for the existence of God or evidence that God created man as a scientist?
I would like to answer that question in a rather different way. I come from a Jewish tradition, and Judaism is essentially highly scientifically literate. It's always been so. Even the rabbis in the Talmud did experiments well before Galileo. And in Maimonides' case, who's perhaps one of the greatest Jewish philosophers who died in 1204, he said of the story of creation that there are two versions. There's the Greek version of the continuity of the universe and the creation, and I prefer the story of the creation. But, he says, if some new evidence comes along, I will have to look at that text and reinterpret it. That's the Jewish position, so it actually informs science. Our understanding of the natural world actually is essential for the development of our ethical beliefs.
But may I repeat my question? Have you, as a scientist, come across evidence of the existence of God or evidence that God created man?
No, I haven't, and I've not come against any evidence for him not existing either, or her not existing either.
But as a scientist, don't you have to give more weight to the things that have been discovered and proved than simply to the things that have not been discovered?
No, Michael, I don't think I do, because, of course, I have no consciousness of what happens outside the universe in which I live. And I have no proof that there is some limit to our universe. But what I see around me, frankly, is something extraordinarily mysterious. And therefore, I think that sometimes we have to recognize that we are a tiny speck in that. And we actually have to understand that there are things we can't understand. And I think the existence or the non-existence of God perhaps is one of those issues.
Over a period of time, I think I could make an argument that we've seen religion retreating in the face of new scientific discovery. The discoveries of Darwin perhaps would be the best example. Mm-hmm. Can you, though, furnish contrary examples? As a scientist, have you seen experiences where science has had to retreat in the face of new religious discoveries?
No, I don't think I have particularly, but I don't think it's terribly relevant to the argument. I think that religion can certainly inform the way science is conducted and certainly to the uses to which it's put. And that perhaps is where it should stand.
And going back to your previous point, that you think there may be things which to you are unknowable, things outside your universe, can I just check? That belief, it seems to be, derives from the way you were brought up and what you were taught as a child and what you've held on to since, I can't see that it relates to anything you've learned as a scientist.
Well, it's kind of you to make that assumption, but of course it is
I'm asking you to.
I was, in fact, for a while, totally irreligious and came from a very different kind of... I did have a Jewish background, but I've come back to it. I don't see myself as being irreligious any longer. But I am interested in the notion that, in, for example, in the book of Job, when God is finally provoked after many chapters at the end, he says, "Where were you when I created the universe?" Actually asking Job, who is every man, not Jewish, actually, do you understand what is around you? And I think that sense of mystery is very important, both for science and for religion. When you are certain, you are actually almost dangerous. Religion and science are both about man's uncertainty.
Lord Winston, thank you very much indeed. Michael Bortillo, where does this leave us? Let's start with Professor Atkins' suggestion, not that Clifford Longley is mad, a debate that might lead us in all sorts of different and rather amusing directions, but isn't particularly relevant. But the sooner we discard religion, the better. As an atheist, do you think that's a good idea?
I think religion in some places at some times can have a utility. I think the Church of England today, being a very moderate religion, has a certain utility. It provides an underpinning for people's ethical bases. But I think that's a bit of luck, actually. You know, in history, I think religion has often been pretty dangerous. And around the world, we can see that religion is being pretty dangerous. I mean, I was with those witnesses, including Lord Winston at the end there, who said that certainty is the enemy here. But I wasn't sure that all the witnesses were entirely straightforward in assessing their own positions. I mean, Lord Winston does believe in the existence of God. That seems to be a certainty. That seems to be rather contrary to the idea that certainty is the enemy.
Well, I think he took the position, didn't he, that is his belief until something comes along that disproves it, which seems a reasonably rational point of view.
Well, is it? That's saying that you can have beliefs which are separate from things which have been proved. And, I mean, I understand that people say that. I've heard a lot of scientists saying it. But to me, it is not... that doesn't seem a particularly rational position. I expect scientists to pitch their tent on the things that have been proved.
David Longley?
The difficulty with Dr. Winston's position, Lord Winston's position, seems to me that there are some things which we are certain about. And I imagine when he was talking about that with abhorrence he seemed to feel about any notion of religion interfering with scientific progress. Well, what about Nazi experiments on the ill, on the sick? Medical experiments. I mean, they're wrong, and they're certainly wrong. There's no doubt about it. It's not fundamentalist. It's not abhorrent to say they're wrong. So there are certainties, and this, if you like, can be deduced from religious grounds.
Claire Fox?
Well, I think my biggest problem with the discussion is pitting two things against each other, which I'm not convinced is where they should be. For example, if you were to say, what is it about religion that's a real threat to science? It can be that it stops experimentation unnecessarily. We've seen that, where religious objections are used, which will then actually stop important scientific developments. But the main things for me are philosophical. It's an affront to the notion of free will. It challenges the notion of reason. Potentially, that's what religion represents. The problem I've got is that there's far greater threats to the notion of free will and rationality and reason today, and they actually come from within science. I mean, if you look at genetic determinism, if you look at some of the problems around scientism, irrationalism and pseudoscience abound within the scientific community. So I think there's a danger that science can say the big threat to us and the big threat to rational, reasonable society is religion, when it's just not true. It's a straw man that we would, which actually just misunderstands the nature of the problems we face in society today.
Melanie Phillips, the central question in this programme is whether there is room for dialogue, whether there is space for coexistence between empirical science and religious belief. Is there, do you think? What do you make of Professor Atkins' idea that there is nothing that science cannot elucidate, in which case, by a process, there will be no ground left for religion at all?
Well, I think that is the essence of the problem. I think there is ample room for the two disciplines to coexist. I think that religious people, with some exceptions, don't really have a problem with science in large measure. They don't have a problem with evolution, despite the fact that some scientists claim falsely that they do. And it's this false polarity that's invented by some scientists who lead us straight into...
How can you say that people of religion have not had problems with science when science has shown a great deal of the narratives of various religions to be, like, you know, the world created in 7 days as an obvious example, as being nonsense?
Well, because a lot of people of religion do not adhere to that narrative as literal. They never did. This is the Book of Maimonides that the Professor Winston was talking about. In the 12th century, he said, you must realize that not all this is to be taken literally. It is similarly, it is analogy. You know, even in the 12th century, they got this. And here we have scientists in the 21st century perpetuating a false dichotomy because they wish to take over the realm of religion. They wish, in their arrogance, to say, as we have heard this afternoon, they wish in their arrogance to say there is nothing that I, as a scientist, cannot elucidate. How do they know that? That is in itself an unscientific proposition.
Can we come whether whether that is so or whether it isn't, it doesn't deal with the problem. I mean, I can perfectly understand that science can be misused and that there can be such a thing as scientific determinism, and we might take a view about that. But the problem we have with religion is that religion is based on revelation. It is based on belief, on faith, on things that are unprovable. And it worries me when scientists come forward and assert that the existence of God can be deduced in ways that are non-scientific. Dr. John Lennox today, for example, thinks that the existence of rationality is something that leads one to be able to prove that God exists. I mean, that simply doesn't prove that God exists, and that worries me therefore very much indeed that what is clearly based on revelation, on faith, is being dressed up as though it were science.
But there is a danger, isn't there, Michael, that what's happened is that, I mean, I think the one thing that's missing from this discussion is politics. And politics, by the way, is us. Our capacity to change things, right? We have to make decisions. You'd think we only had a choice between, part of the modern thing is we've got politics, us. And one of the things that has happened with science, which is where it gets like revelation, is every politician that you ever hear these days says, the evidence shows that scientific papers show this, they show that. It becomes like revelation. And we, the people, are meant to sit there and go, oh, the evidence shows, no question then. That's the end of it. And that's where I think that there is a danger that there is a new religion. So don't let's just get hung up on the...
And that excludes the possibility of dialogue. I can imagine dialogue with someone like Dr. Tallis, who sounded to me open-minded and willing to argue. I can't imagine a dialogue with someone like Dr. Atkins, who thinks I'm mad.
Well, Professor Atkins, as it happens, don't demote him just because you don't like him.
But it's all very well for Claire to introduce the question of politics, which, of course, could be part of another discussion. But there would be no discussion like this one. There would be no question of politics if people hadn't died over the ages to separate politics from religion. And it's only because of that luxury that we're having this discussion today.
And that's... And that's where we have to leave it. From our panel, Claire Fox, Melanie Phillips, Michael Portillo, Clifford Longley, and from me, and from Cheltenham, until the same time next week. Goodbye.
The Moral Maze was chaired by Michael Burke and produced by Phil Pegan.